So it will be me first, and then it will be San Sikli. This is how I repay him for this. Evelyn Tang, Taylor Hughes, and Titus Neupert. So we will take, you know, 5-10 minutes each, and we'll discuss some aspects of this problem that we have been thinking in a very, how to say, broad-minded sense. Okay, so the problem that I had in mind, that this is what I had been thinking, doesn't mean this is what other people have been thinking about. You know, I have my brain, like most of yours, has two hemispheres. And this side works on topological order, and this side works on high TC. And from time to time, they talk to each other. They get entangled, okay? So then you need to think about how these things, you know, go together. So for a long time, people thought that maybe high TC could be explained in terms of some mysterious spin liquid, and some people still think it's so, but the experiments don't seem to agree with that. On the other hand, there are other problems that are more classical problems of topological fluids, such as the quantum Hall fluids, that have begun to show some signs of symmetry breaking over the years. And the importance of this has not been appreciated until, I think, some recent experiments in Jim Eisenstein's group in Caltech, probably about 2010. So, if you go to very high magnetic fields, in the lowest Landau level, or the first Landau level, you see these beautiful quantum Hall fluids, the fractional quantum Hall fluids, they are our prototype of topological phases of matter. At lower magnetic fields, then you tend to get other things. You get bubbles, you get stripes, you get pneumatic states, you get other things. And Jim Eisenstein has been doing experiments in the first Landau level and using here the labeling of Landau levels in the way the stories of buildings are labeled outside North America. Okay, so there is the lowest Landau level, the first Landau level, the second Landau level. Okay, so let's be clear about this. So in the first Landau level, what they see is essentially in the center of the Landau level, there is a famous five-half state, which is this non-abelian quantum Hall phase. It's supposed to be a paired state, so there's some indication that there are some effective attractive interactions playing a role. There are the satellite states that look like seven-thirds that have a Laughlin state, which is incompressible. And then Jim likes to tilt magnetic fields. So he put some parallel component at fixed perpendicular component, a little similar to what we heard today Philip Kim discuss in spirit. And what they see there is that as a function of the tilt angle, the transport, which is, in other words, they measure RxX. So that's the longitudinal resistance in the system, becomes an isotropic. So in other words, it appears to depend on the direction in which, whether it's RxX or RyY, they behave differently. So it's a little similar to what they saw before in the second Landau level, in the center of the Landau level, in the regime that I like to call the pneumatic phase, because it's a compressible phase in that regime, so it appears to break rotational invariance. You may say that here the symmetry is broken explicitly by the parallel magnetic field, and this is so. But there is a temperature dependence in the anisotropy that appears to be rather pronounced, which is suggesting that you have a large pneumatic susceptibility, I would call that. And presumably the system is probably not far from undergoing a phase transition where rotational invariance may be spontaneously broken. Okay. So there you have a case where you may actually have two different states, the states that people like to think about in high TC, which are these pneumatic phases, and the topological phases coexisting in the same material, in the same system, perhaps. More recent, so this is sort of the experimental motivation, if you wish. And so the question is, how do we understand, for example, the effective description of these phases, of what is effective field theory, if you want, that has both the fluctuations of the cinematic order parameters together with the topological description of this phase. So you need to do, in a sense, Landau and non-Landau. Okay, so you need to do both things at the same time, and in particular, you need to understand how the pneumatic phase couples to the collective modes. There is a famous Gerwin McDonald Platzman mode, and we have Alan here to testify about this. If I'm lying. So this mode seems to play a rather important mode. That's the only low-energy collective excitation of the fractional Hall fluid. And therefore, presumably, it has a lot to do with the anisotropy that it has, that is being seen in this particular phase. One aspect of this mode that I always thought was interesting is that it's actually quadrupolar in nature. It's not dipolar. It has a residue as Alan and his collaborators showed a long time ago, goes like U square, and therefore it's a quadrupolar fluctuation, which is actually the same character that the pneumatic mode has. Okay, so expect that to be also in the quadrupolar channel. So presumably, if the phase transition is to exist in that system, it would require that this mode, at least at zero wave vector, should actually come down to zero energy and condense. Of course, if it were to condense in the magnetoroton, which is a problem that they were interested in, then it will break translation invariance and will give you something like a stripe or some object of that type. Okay. So in other words, it's possible that in systems of this type, actually, you may see a coexistence of these two types of phases. So this has motivated a number of people to think about that. There is an interesting paper from Joseph Masieko and collaborators from Princeton that they did sort of a phenomenological analysis of this problem. And it's a sort of a reevaluation of an older work by, so this is, I want to mention, I don't know if I know all the authors here. This is Masieko, Wang Su, I think the other person is I think it's Jung, but I'm not sure. Steve Kielson and Shivaji Sondhi. And this is a re-evaluation of an earlier paper, set of papers by Mulligan. Nayak and Kachra. Who is a string theorist, by the way. Okay, so he's the one that normally shows data, whereas I don't. So this guy is actually had a theory of this effect, which was a very interesting theory. It's probably basically right, but has some problems with Kohn's theorem. And this guy sort of sorted out how this came about. In a sense, the issue is you need a separate fluctuating field in addition to the topological fields, if you wish. You need a field which is like the order parameter field. An interesting result that these people had is the role that a quantity that is called the Hall viscosity plays in this theory essentially plays a role, enters in a variphase space, a variphase term that quantizes, gives you the effective quantum mechanics of the pneumatic modes. And it reflects the time reversal symmetry breaking in that system. So this is sort of an interesting set of problems. The experiment is not there yet in the sense it shows a large susceptibility, but not quite a phase transition. Now with a student of mine, we looked at a related problem, which is not, we're looking at this problem too, but we are farther from getting there. This is with Yizi, you and me. We looked at a model of a topological, of a system that actually likes to have a topological insulator for bidynamical symmetry breaking, in a sense. So it's a quadratic, it's a lattice mode with quadratic band crossing, and spontaneously can have either a pneumatic phase, which is a semi-metal in that system, or it can have a time reversal symmetry breaking state, an anomalous quantum Hall state. And it has a phase where these two regimes, these two phases coexist. And there you can actually, because the system is in the language of the high energy people, asymptotically free. So you have a beta function which is quadratic in the coupling constants. You can compute essentially in weak coupling perturbations here, you can do a good job in this problem. So you have a controlled perturbation theory. And so you can derive the effective field theory, and it's very similar to the theory that these people guessed. There are some interesting differences due to the spinor structure that we have, but at the basic level has a number of similarities with this other theory. So this is an example, if you wish, where the two types of symmetries, that if you wish, the topological phase, which has a hydrodynamic description similar to what Xiao Gang proposed long ago for the fractional Hall effect, and at the same time you need essentially a description of the fluctuating order parameters. So this is they actually dictate in a rather interesting way how the quantum dynamics of the system evolves. So this is all I wanted to say. So if this is more of in the way of an announcement than anything else, but yes.
So when this instability towards this the rotation center breaking,
yes.
How does help or not help to get this P pass IP state, which is a Fapping state?
Well, this is actually.
Does Fapping state relate to that?
That's actually the important question in my mind.
I see.
Because I think the tendency of the systems to form states that break either a rotation invariance or translation invariance is related to the existence of an effective attraction in this first Landau level, which is actually the mechanism that ultimately gives you the pair state.
I see. So you'll say this is a state and
the breaking. The fact that they appear in the same samples is not only the same samples, also as you tilt the field, you seem to get the same type of physics. They saw that in the second Landau level in tilted fields, they also get essentially the usual compressible state eventually. And the same is true when in the first Landau level when they kill the more rigid state. So the indication is that, in a sense, the systems essentially have a common fate. And that is not seen in the lowest Landau level, presumably, because this type of interactions just are not operative there. But, for instance, in the problem that we studied with my student, these are both marginally relevant perturbations. They sort of compete in some regimes, but they can also coexist, and you can see how that comes about. Okay, so yes.
Suppose there is a quantum asymmetry breaking.
Yes.
Happening starting from a topological fluid.
Yes.
Because of Goldstone mode, and will it mask all the topological features?
No, they don't. So it happens inside that phase. But it doesn't. In this case, it's a nematic order parameter. The nematic couples to the topological fluid much in the same way as a metric tensor does. Essentially, it shears the fluid. Essentially, it gives you essentially some shear coupling.
So
in other words, the Maxwell type terms which you will get essentially tells you how this thing fluctuates, they become anisotropic, and that's
so
all that happens.
Gap remains.
Yeah, the gap remains. There is a gapless mode, however, that appears, but it doesn't destabilize the topological fluid. So there is a quantum phase transition inside the topological fluid. Actually, similar things happen in superconductors. You can have, for instance, a D wave superconductor, and it can go into a D plus S state, which in that sense will be nematic because it breaks the rotational invariance, and it will have a critical point inside the superconducting state without destroying the superconductor. So the difference is here, this is happening inside the topological phase, presumably by similar mechanisms of what Xiao Gang was asking me about, which is the more interesting question in a sense. Yeah. Yes?
So if one wanted to describe logs at the level of wave function,
yes.
So does it mean that we would have to deform wave functions? And...
Yeah, that's an interesting and complicated problem. So Duncan Haldane has been working on that. His view is that the symmetry is explicitly broken, so he works essentially with elongated orbitals, essentially. And of course, if you try to rewrite the elongated orbitals in terms of the circular orbits of the Landau level, you need actually a massive amount of Landau level mixing. Okay, to do that. So it's actually not easy to do. Now, there is an old proposal by Leon Valens back from the mid-90s, I think. He proposed to take, I think it was the, Leon or Bob Joint or both, I'm not entirely sure. So to split the triple zero of the lambda of the Laughlin state, and essentially to split that into three zeros along some particular direction. So that wave function is perfectly legitimate in a sense, and, but it does have some mixing, some Landau level mixing, if you do that. You cannot do it entirely in the lowest Landau level. So from the point of view of the theory that these guys have to, were working on, it seemed to require some kind of Landau level mixing in some important way. That's probably is possible. And these other arguments indicate that that's not entirely necessary. But you need more degrees of freedom. So if you simply say all you have essentially is a bunch of Landau levels and their collective modes, it becomes very difficult to do it. Unless you make the Garvey-MacDonald plasma mode condense.
Did anybody try to, because we try to study this numerically in some.
Sorry? One could try to study this
numerically in some realistic model, right, with pseudo potentials and so on, right? If you, I guess, looking at overlap, if there is a good.
Unfortunately, there has been some work done, but the symmetry is always explicitly broken in all these papers. So Duncan and several of his collaborators have been doing that, but they always break the symmetry first. Mm-hmm. And they don't ask whether the symmetry is spontaneously broken or not. So I don't know, there's more work to be done. That's, in a sense, that will be an interesting possibility, I think. So if there isn't, well, let me then ask some of the various people I quote volunteer to comment. So Sunsik has some interesting recent work with Dennis on how to make non-Fermi liquids. Evelyn Tang, I think we'll talk, well, I'm not sure whether it will be the superconductor work with the, well, she will decide what to talk about. Taylor will talk about some work that he's done recently in Urbana with Jeffrey Teo on declinations and topology. And Titus Neupert will talk about what happens when you crank up the coupling constant in flat band systems. Okay. Why don't you take this?
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so I asked Eduardo to lead a discussion, and then Eduardo asked me back to. So. So I'm interested in coming up so metallic state. So probably the most generic gapless state in condensed system is metal, and we want to understand metals using low energy effective theory, and we of course have Landau form liquid theory. But and we understand this theory very well, but there are many experimental examples of non-Fermi liquids, and we don't have a theoretical handle to understand those non-Fermi liquid state in a quantitative way. And those non-Fermi liquid state often arise when there's quantum phase transition in matter. So if I have some two-dimensional Fermi surface, and then if there's some symmetry breaking, like rotational symmetry breaking, like Riemannic order, and then at a critical point, not only the fermions near the Fermi surface, but there are some collective mode that describe the order parameter, which become gapless. And then theoretically, the problem is what happens when particle Hall excitations near the Fermi surface strongly mix with some collective fluctuations in the system. And generically, this system flows into some strongly interacting field theory. And we don't know how to understand this theory because of the strong coupling problem. And we recently made some progresses in access those non-fermi liquid state in a controlled way. So one method is dimensional regularization. This is the work done with Dennis. So idea is that if you go to higher dimension, then the coupling between fermions and bosons become weaker. We know at sufficiently high dimension, mean field theory works. Therefore, there must be some upper critical dimension at which the coupling is marginal. Okay, and then, but in relativistic field theory, we know how to do it very well because there is a Lorentz symmetry. So it doesn't matter how you extend the dimension. In the presence of fermion surfaces, it becomes more tricky because there is no Lorentz symmetry. Naive dimensional regularization would tell you that you can just extend the space dimension, and then accordingly, the dimension of the fermion surface increase accordingly, like that. But this theory actually is still very complicated because in this case, it turns out that at each point on the fermion surface, for any two points on the fermion surface, you can find at least one common tangent vector. That means particle Hoare excitation at this point and particle Hoare excitation at this point remains strongly coupled. That means in the low energy effective theory, you have to keep Hoare modes, which we don't know how to solve yet. So another way of adding an extra dimension is adding co-dimension. In other words, starting from the two-dimensional Fermi surface, but keep the dimension of the Fermi surface to be one, but add co-dimension. Like it's like a Fermi line embedded in higher dimensional space. And then in this case, it turns out that when space dimension is 5/2, the coupling between this fermion and boson is marginal. And then if you go just below that critical dimension, then you can stabilize the coupling to a finite but small value. And then you can compute anomalous dimensions and then various properties, you know, in a controlled manner. Okay. So that's one thing. And another thing is so-called chiral non-fermion liquid.
Question about that. Yeah. So what determines this, perhaps, in what sense is marginal there? In the way the collective modes happen, or in the
So four fermion, short-range four fermion interaction is irrelevant,
yes.
But this Yukawa coupling is marginal at 5/2. Yeah.
It's the scaling.
So another example that we can understand quantitative physics in non-fermion liquid is so-called chiral non-fermion liquid. So chiral means suppose I have a quantum Hoare. By the way, this is work done with my student Shobik. And if I have a quantum Hoare, say integer quantum Hoare state mu equal one, then I have edge mode, chiral edge mode. And suppose I stack them up, and then turn on tunneling between different layers. Then on this two-dimensional surface, I have a 2D conducting state. But this is chiral in the sense that Fermi velocity is always positive. In this direction is non-chiral, but in one direction is chiral. So Fermi surface has only one side instead of having two sides, I have only one side. The other side is on the other side of the real space, so they are decoupled. So in this case, even in 2+1D, this theory flows into strongly interacting theory, but due to the chirality, you can actually compute dynamical critical exponent and then critical dimension exactly. So I think this is kind of a 2D version of chiral Luttinger liquid that Xiaoguang studied many years ago, where there also scaling dimension of some operators are protected due to chirality. Here is the same thing, but it's not really coupled 1D chain, you really need infinite chain to have a 2 plus 1D chiral run. Okay, so if you want to know more, you can chat more, but let me start here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
The scaling form,
scaling form.
Can be computed exactly, but the crossover function you cannot compute exactly.
Scaling
dimensions can be computed exactly.
So you also have a large number of perturbations in this theory, right?
This one is very strongly coupled theory.
But there are many different perturbations you can have depending. You know, it's tunneling and density couplings and all kinds.
So you're saying there are many marginal deformations.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
So the critical theory is characterized by the shape of the form surface. So shape is the data that characterizes the universality class. Right. An interesting point is that the full forming surface is made of many patches with different universality class. For example, generic points have some quadratic curvature, but there are some inflection points where curvature is like cubic. And actually this theory belongs to different universality class. So there exists no one scaling where whole low energy degrees freedoms are scale invariant. So therefore thermodynamic response function actually has more than one universal component. This one? Yeah, this quantum Hall. And you can have some.
Lattice model, not from this layer of quantum. I mean, some explicit lattice model.
I mean, you can put some quantum Hall state on a lattice. And then the idea is that you introduce some flavor degrees freedom.
You mean just like some band model, and then
yeah,
you turn on some tunneling.
And then.
So
yeah,
there are actually experiments in materials.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So only thing you have to do is to drive the system across phase transition, quantum phase transition that occurs on the chiral forming surface. Then you can have chiral non-forming liquid. So for that you need more than one flavor. So actually maybe the model that we think about is you may have some two stacks of quantum Hall layer with the same chirality here, and then this gives some SU2 flavor.
So each layer you have some fraction of some quantum, you expect fractionalization in this.
No, I think even though this is fractional quantum state, once you couple them, then generically this is a chiral forming liquid.
Yeah,
in 2D. Yeah. So this is, yeah, different kinds of.
Right, let's again. Oh, you're bringing a computer.
Can you do this?
Just put that in your pocket, I guess.
Hello?
It's on, or it'll be like.
What's on?
Yeah, it's on.
Sorry. Wait, how did that go? I got out of this. Max is so.
This is pretty old, right? This was from
the mid-90s.
Thanks. So I'm going to give an example of a state, a superconductor with intrinsic topological order. And I'm just using some slides that I gave earlier this summer. So And this is work that I did with my advisor, Xiao Gang. So we looked at, essentially, we needed a system in which you have quantum Hall effects on a lattice system. So this is the specific model that we use on a Kagome lattice, but essentially, you know, something like what Philip Kim talks about today would work just as well. So I'm not going to go into the details, but what I would like to say is that if we do have a lattice system like this and the fractional quantum Hall effects, then we do know that at rational fillings, then we will get incompressible state, the fractional quantum Hall effects. And now what we're curious about here is what happens when we dope away from a commensurate filling to an incommensurate filling. So what happens when we dope away from, for instance, our ubiquitous one-third state, what kind of ground state we would get. So in here we use a model in which we use an anion gas. So assuming that by doping away we get a finite gas of anionic excitations. And in here, well, the first thing that one could expect is that if you have a completely flat band, we expect the anions to localize to form a Wigner crystal. And one thing new that the lattice gives here is that the lattice could allow us to be in a regime in which the anions now have a finite anion mass and in which they have some hopping. And so to describe this regime, what we did was to build a band structure for the anions. And so starting again, assuming that these are anions from the one-third state, then they would see, in this Kagome lattice, they would see a flux of 2 pi over 3 per unit cell. And so this would triple the unit cell. And so then we could write down some effective hopping such that the fluxes that they see at mimic would essentially be 2 pi over 3 per unit cell. And this gives us a new band structure where we see that now there are 6 degenerate minima. So we see that in this one-third state that there has to be at least degenerate minima of 3 or 6. And so this means that we have 6 anion species effectively. So in this model, starting from 6 anion species, we'd like to ask what is the ground state? And so to deal with an anionic fluid which has these properties, 6 species and a statistical angle of pi over 3, we chose a composite fermion approach where we take the anion and we split it into a flux and composite fermion. And then we use the flux and we do a mean field approximation in which we treat as a background field. So that now we've turned the problem into fermions in a constant magnetic field. And these fermions now could form either compressible states or quantum Hall states. For example, one scenario in which we explored is where all the properties of the anion gas carry over. So the 6 anions become 6 fermions. The pi over 3 statistical angle provides a filling fraction of 3 over 2. And one scenario we explored is in which these 6 species of anions form 3 musical to half bilayer Halperin states. So in this particular filling fraction, the fermions would prefer to form a quantum Hall state, an auxiliary quantum Hall state in this background magnetic field instead of forming a compressible state. So what is a mean field quantum Hall state that these composite fermions form? And work from long ago shows that this is an anion superfluid, or looking at the system as a whole, this is an electron superfluid. Heuristically, you can see that it does have the same properties as a superfluid in that you have one density mode as the only gapless mode, and all the other modes are gapped. And to understand why we would get a gapless mode like this, we can look more closely at our approach. And what happens when we have fluctuations of the fermion density? Because of our flux attachment approach, where we have the flux and the fermions combining in a very specific ratio, so if our fermion density were to fluctuate, the magnetic flux would fluctuate in exactly the same way, giving rise to the filling fraction being locally constant. And so this means that the quantum Hall state is a locally stable state, even with fluctuations. And this gives rise to this one gapless mode in the system. So this is the model that we have, and what properties does this superfluid state have? So we can look at two different aspects of the state. One is the gapless mode. And when we look at the flux quantization, it's regular flux quantization, the same as what you would have in a BCS state. What is more unusual are the quasiparticle excitations. And there we find that when we look at the quasiparticle excitations, that they have fractionalized statistics. So the exchange statistics are unusual, and this is a signature of topological intrinsic topological order. I'm going to skip this, and so this is an example, I suppose, of what Eduardo was saying, that here we have intrinsic topological order as well as symmetry breaking, UN symmetry breaking, and this is a mechanism in which we found that that we can obtain fractionalized statistics, and this is something that I didn't show. And one question about this topological order is that it is rather unusual, because typically we think of topological order as something that is gapped, and I think it is well defined there. And now that we have this topological order that comes together with a gapless mode, we do have questions about how to characterize this gapless topological order, and I think more work can be done in that direction. And also, it would be interesting to ask where such a state could be realized, because the physics in here is essentially that of the quantum Hall state with the addition of a periodic potential. So graphene or a system like this is where we could see something like this. And essentially what we're looking at is how the interplay of the lattice and the quantum Hall physics works together. So this is...
So one of the role of the lattice was to give different species of anions.
Yes.
They somehow combine and condense into a busiest type of state.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there is other way of getting an additional quantum number for anions in the standard quantum Hall problem, like bilayer or many layers, can you imagine such a superconducting state? The standard continuum quantum Hall problem.
Oh, okay.
Suppose I have
additional
quantum number.
I see.
Without bringing in lattice periods.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the different species of the anions does create a structure or a texture that is more complicated. So that does seem like something that does contribute to the properties of this system. And
just a bilayer quantum number.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could say that the more rich state is an example of that.
It's a better
state.
Charge 2e is it?
But it was. Because it's not charged.
But here, you're claiming the charge 2e is it? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that in general.
I think this happened to be calculated. I think that there is another example of this in the Kagome lattice. There have to be 4e. This quantum Hall partial superfluid is very strange, and just for this particular case happened to be 2e. But there are other example, which is 4e. So charge 4e superfluid is not very strange. It depends on how many species as in the quantum Hall. I forgot in quantum lattice there is another in Herbert Smith side we try to say. If a Herbert Smith side is a spin liquid, if a double that spin liquid, it's likely to be charged 4e. That there, I think there's a three species or four species.
So the excitations here are what this Z2 square gives you, the quantum numbers of the vortices, or so what classifies Z2 square?
Yes, so we can, I guess it's the algebra of how we add them, because we see that when we
but
combine,
what particles essentially over the algebra?
But we use a K-matrix approach from here, and
yes.
so we can use the L vector to describe quasi particle excitations.
Uh-huh.
So I guess combinations of anions from different from the different minima. Is what you were asking?
Yes.
Okay. So the pair that the charge degree of length at the zero momentum was finite. Like you have six minima, right?
Yeah.
So
zero momentum.
But in the harvesting case, I remember it can condense some finite momentum cases.
I should check them. I'm not sure.
Right, let's move on then. So you remove the room.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to just draw a few pictures to show you some interesting stuff that myself and some collaborators, primarily Jeff Petillo, have been thinking about for topological systems protected by spatial symmetries. So there's a lot of news recently about this reflection symmetric topological crystalline insulators. We've been thinking about other systems along with many other groups, the systems protected by rotation symmetries or translation symmetries. So if I just draw a picture of a 1D topological insulator superconductor, I would draw some gapped wire, which has some low energy balance states. Okay, so there's some topological invariant, which I'll call G, which tells you that this either has an even or odd number of balance states. Then I can imagine stacking these balance states into 2D, similar to what Sung-Sik did there into 3D. Okay. So if I do this, I imagine the edge has some low energy modes on it. But this system, instead of being described by some isotropic topological invariant, is actually described by a vector, which tells you which way you stack. So it's some vector with some components, which tells you where you stack these things. And this is called a weak topological insulator or superconductor. So this system, in fact, has topological modes in the boundary, which are protected by translation symmetry, because if you have an even number of layers, you can dimerize the system with some density wave on the boundary to gap the edges in this case. Okay, so this is a topological insulator protected by inversion symmetry, translation symmetry. So the interesting thing about this system is that actually it's very sensitive to how you insert translation defects in the system. So in fact, if you put dislocations in the system, it can actually sense that, because the dislocations act as something which is like a flux for this symmetry protection. And so if you stick an edge dislocation in the system, what it looks like is it looks like an incomplete topological wire in this case, and so you get a balance state that sits in the middle of the system. This is some cartoon picture, but if you couple all the wires together, you get some balance state. But you can see that if I put the dislocation the other direction, so for example, if I removed a half line of atoms this way, okay, then there would be no balance state, it would just be a gap system in this case. Okay, so what you find is that something first predicted by Astrovizhnov's group, that if you take the Burgers vector of this location and dot it into this topological invariant vector here, determined by the topology of the electronic structure, that whether this number is even or odd in some units tells you whether you have bound states or not. So in this case, the stacking vector is in this direction, so only a dislocation in that direction will have this thing be non-zero in this case. Okay. So you could do something similar in 3D. So you can imagine stacking topological wires into 3D. So I can imagine layering some wires and then making planes out of these wires. And then the ends of these systems would all form, so I can draw it as a cube. The ends of these systems would all form topological, have you have these topological bound states, but now it would only be on two surfaces in this case. So this system actually gives you an antisymmetric two-form GIJ, which represents this topological invariant in this case. Right? So this would be called what's called a secondary weak invariant. Right? So the different picture of this is you can imagine taking a different two-dimensional system, which is the churn insulator in this case, which has some bound states. Okay. And you could stack this system to 3D, which is exactly the sort of picture here, a non-interacting picture of this chiral Fermi liquid in this case, where you stack up these churn insulators into 3D. What you end up with is some three-dimensional system, which has a chiral sheet of edge states on the boundary. Okay. This system, again, you have one stacking direction. This gives you a vector. Okay, so this is in 3D, this is a first-order weak invariant. This is a second-order weak invariant. So again, if you put a dislocation in this system where B dot G is non-zero, you get some bound states along the dislocation line. And so here what you actually need to this case, which is different, one vector is not good enough. And so in this case, what you have to put in is you have to put in a system which has two different dislocations, which link. And so if you have a system with two different Burgers vectors, so you have GI times GIJ with B1i and B2j, and these two dislocation lines link, then the dislocation lines will contain some bound states in this case. And the way to think about that is that this is like you're stacking up churn insulators, which is similar to this case. And so if you put in a edge dislocation,
you get an extra plane of Chern insulator with an edge state on it, which sits there. In this case, what happens is this is like stacking up weak topological insulators. So you put a weak topological insulator in, but its edge state's not protected. And so what you have to do is you have to put a dislocation through that weak topological insulator. So these things are sort of linking in this case. Okay? So this is the sort of picture for translation invariant systems, which shows the sort of interplay between topology, which are these topological invariants, and some topological property of the order, which is the translation Burgers vector, which is quantized because you have discrete translation symmetry. So now we've been thinking about disclinations. So if I think about some square lattice system, in this case, we can imagine there's disclinations. So a disclination, if I take some particle and go in the disclination, you generically pick up a Frank angle, which tells you how much you're rotated. And you also pick up a translation, which tells you how much you're translated in this case. So the Frank angle is topological. You can deform the core of the disclination. The Frank angle doesn't change. But you can show that if you deform the disclination in the core, or you change the loop in which you encircle it, the translation piece can change. So the translation piece, in general, is not a complete topological invariant. But in fact, there is something preserved. So if you have a C4 symmetric lattice, then the number of translations you enclose is always either even or odd. So no matter how you deform the core, or no matter how you deform the loop in this case, the number of translations in our disclination is either even or odd. And this even or oddness comes from the fact that for C4 symmetry, you have two different rotation centers. So you actually get two different types of disclinations in C4 symmetry. And this is what happens in any lattice system. So the way to see this is that a disclination, you can imagine, is a hexagonal or a pentagonal plaquette. And this one, you can see if you go around, you get five translations. The other type of disclination is a trivalent vertex, like this. And if you complete this with plaquettes, let's see if I can get this correct. That's too many vertices. That. And in this system, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 when you go around in this case. These are two different vortex cores. Okay. So what we've been trying to understand is how to determine whether or not disclinations contain bound states. And so what you find in the system is the disclinations also have a piece which translates you. So you find out there's a contribution to this, what we called an index, which is the translation dotted into the weak invariant of the system. But there's also a piece which depends on the rotation property of the system. So these are systems protected by rotation symmetry. So if you have a C4 symmetric model like this, you get an extra piece, which is proportional to the churn of the Frank angle times some rotation topological invariants. So there's several of these. I'm not going to write them down in this case. But in every case, what you see is there's this combination of some property which is of the electronic structure plus some piece which comes from the topological defect of the order you're putting there. So you get Burgers vector, Frank angle. And in fact, if you just have a churn insulator, you also get a piece here, which is the churn number times the flux, right? So the churn number times the flux tells you something else in the system. It tells you about how much charge is bound to some region or how many bound states you have in this case. Okay? So the one cute thing that I'll leave you with is we actually found that there's something which is actually purely rotational in these systems, and that's the existence of corner states in a system. So disclinations contain bound states, but if you imagine that you have a two-dimensional version of Kataev's P-wave wire, okay, where you have 4 Majorana fermions per plaquette, and you connect them up diagonally, then what you're left with in this case is that if you have boundaries which have corners, you will have an odd number of Majorana modes. So if I connect this in some way, which is diagonal, like this, on the boundary, then on every corner you have 3 unsaturated Majorana modes, whereas on the edges you only have 2. And so in this system, if it's expanded, you will find out that this system actually has an odd number of Majorana fermions on the boundary, which is protected by the C4 rotation symmetry. And the interesting thing is that this is actually not so far from reality, because if you take strontium-ruthenate, and instead of assuming it's in the chiral P-wave P+IP state, if you assume it's in what's called the Ragoux-Kapitolnik-Kivelson state, which is a one-dimensional topological, a one-dimensional quasi-1D order parameter, the model looks actually very similar to this in this case. It's C4 symmetric, but it's quasi-1D, given by the DXZ and DYZ orbitals. And that state is actually realized as the topological invariance necessary to have these sort of corner states. So strontium-ruthenate, of course, has spin, so the numbers will be doubled, but still it's some indication this type of physics could be present in real life.
So in the final example, do you need the additional symmetry?
In this case?
Yeah. C4 angle in the
additional. I mean, you essentially just need C4 symmetry in this case.
So C4.
Yes, only C4.
But why you cannot get out this Mandela modes on a single site?
On a single site, so I mean,
yeah,
you have three.
And ten on.
You have this thing here, which is connected like that, so you have three. So you could gap two of them, you could gap two, but not three. If you turn any C4 perturbation, any C4 symmetric perturbation to this
site. But how about you add some local bound?
Yes, that's
one is my gonna mask.
Like that, right?
Yeah.
So what that does is that gaps these two modes here, and this mode is exponentially localized because it's connected to that mode now, right? So you can think about this as a P8 wire diagonal. And so yes, it's not an exact zero mode, but it's exponentially low. So as long as the ones that remain close to engine zero are the ones which have the furthest distance away. So now there's a diagonal distance to the other corner, which is exponentially down to zero. So it's not exactly zero. But if you turn on any C4 symmetric perturbation, it will be exponentially low, exponentially close to zero in the system size in this case.
So in this case, even without translational symmetry and the tenon strong compression, this exchange still survive or?
If by strong interaction you mean turn on hopping terms and coupling,
like a four-Fermat interaction,
four-Fermat interaction. Yeah, and it should be the same. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you could probably kill with eight, but probably not four.
Okay, just one more person. Another question. Okay, it was David Wright. You need the computer?
No, I don't have slides.
So Titus,
the last thing that stands between you and the dinner is my recent results. Okay, fine. Let me just grab some thoughts that I had. So what I wanted say is, I think, a little bit connected to where is the chalk, is connected to what Greg was talking about. So what he basically started off is with some topological insulator or some non-interacting topological state, and then he discussed what happens when you add interactions, and it turns out that after some critical interaction, you get actually something nice, something interesting, an interesting state. But then he mentioned that there is always the danger of the system not doing what you want, but actually it breaks your time reversal symmetry, and you get like some time reversal symmetry broken state instead. So I want to address this kind of competition in the setup where we are talking about actual topologically ordered states of fractional quantum Hall-like states. And also, I'm not actually starting with an insulator, but with still a topological band structure, but doped to in the middle of the band. So the benefit will be that actually both this state and this state will be interesting. So we'll be safe no matter what happens. Okay, so let me do things in order. So the two buzzwords that were thrown at me were a topological order and symmetries, right? And so for the topological order, I translate that for me to the fractional quantum Hall effect. And symmetries, I will consider mainly time reversal symmetry here, and maybe I'll quickly comment on translational symmetry. Okay, so the fractional quantum Hall effect, I will again take a slight modification of that, which is called fractional churn insulators. That was what Evelyn actually already mentioned. So instead of going into the usual setup of Landau levels and the strong magnetic field that we apply to a two-dimensional electron gas, we rather think about a band structure, and this band structure is special in such a way that the churn number of the band is plus one and minus one, say. And so we have sort of a band insulator with non-trivial band topology. So the whole conductivity of the band insulator, if we were sitting here with our chemical potential, would be one. And now I'm considering a situation where we partially fill this lower band, and we switch on some interactions which are large compared to the bandwidth of this band. Okay, and then we get a state that is like a fractional quantum Hall effect or a fractional churn insulator. So just to say, it's not flat bands anymore that we need. So we have now understood, actually, that's the fractional turn insulator 2.0. So we have now understood that actually it doesn't really matter what the other bands are doing, as long as the interactions are much larger than the bandwidth of that one partially filled band. You will get this kind of, you know, some fractional quantum Hall state. Okay, so this will give you a state. No. And actually, it depends on subtleties. It depends on, of course, the strong interaction limit. I mean, this like think of nearest neighbor interactions and fermions. Then taking the interaction to infinity is basically making a big fermion out of it, like with excluding occupation on nearest neighbor sites. It's an extended hardcore fermion. And this limit, it depends on the filling, actually, whether this limit gives you some trivial crystal in as a classical system or not. If the classical system has a macroscopic ground state degeneracy, you are in good shape and you will most likely get a fractional turn insulator up on adding the, you know, lowest order hopping term. The classicals, if I take U to infinity and forget completely about the hopping. Exactly, yeah. Exactly that, yeah. Okay, so fine. So what we have then in a cartoon picture, we have something that's described by a field theory by John Simon's theory at level. You know, I just take a one component version here, like this. But this is 1/1 the filling fraction, this integer k. And now the intriguing idea of how to add symmetry to this problem is very simple. We just write two copies of this guy and associate this degree of freedom that we obtain, for example, with spin. So we have a gauge field for upspin particles and a gauge field for downspin particles. And we are searching for a realization of such a state. Okay, it's time reversal symmetric topologically ordered state. And so the way we could engineer a system that gives us for sure this state, knowing the existence of this one, is we take a Chern insulator Hamiltonian for upspin particles, and we take same thing, just time reversal conjugate for downspin particles, and that we add the interactions that we need. I mean, this U basically amongst the upspin particles, and the same interaction that we need to get the fractional Chern insulator for the downspin particles. And if this is our Hamiltonian, we are bound to, you know, find this guy. So it's a time reversal symmetric fractional topological insulator. So it happens to be that this non-interacting Hamiltonian is nothing but the topological insulator, or what, you know, the kind of model that you would construct for the quantum spin Hall effect. And now, this is just a product. So the ground state of this guy will just be a product of two fractional Chern insulator ground states. Okay, but now, of course, generically in any material, we would also have an interaction term, which basically it's like these are all like density-density interactions. So this would also be there, the density-density interaction between the upspin and the downspin particles. And this can now basically do the harm. So here we start from that partially filled Ti, and if we maintain time reversal symmetry, then we can basically get to the fractional topological insulator. But now if this U up down is too large, it might spontaneously give us a ferromagnetic instability, and we might end up in a stoner magnetized state. But this is actually not that problematic, because let's suppose we started with a 1/3 filling for the upspin and downspin particles. So this is supposed to number of whatever, like some size of my Hilbert, like number of single particle orbitals, fill them all both 1/3, so that I have like a 1/3 cross 1/3 state. Now, if I do stoner, what happens is, of course, these all flip, and I have 2/3 of downspin particles and no upspin particles anymore. And so this one, however, lives now. So since these are all downspin particles, they all live in this Chern insulator band structure. And the state that I'll get is exactly a fractional churn insulator with two-third filling, just for the downspin particles, and the upspin particles don't do anything anymore. So this time rules of symmetry breaking state in this case will be a fractional churn insulator. Okay. So this is the kind of competition that we find also numerically. So it's now a question of, you know, if you look at the topological insulator and you can bring it to the regime where band structure is at bandwidth is much smaller, then the interaction, it's then a question of, you know, how the interaction exactly plays out, whether you go this route and get the fractional topological insulator or whether you get a sternomagnetism. And via that, you should get a fractional churn insulator. I am probably pretty close to finishing. Let me just mention one thing which is neat because of the fact that we have a lattice here. So you might ask, you know, you can do the same stuff also in the continuum. You can also think about breaking translational symmetries producing a charge density wave, and then on top of this, it's a little bit related to what Evelyn was talking about. On top of that, you could still have a fractional churn insulator. So suppose I have a charge density wave which locks particles like this, okay, on a triangular lattice. Is that what I want to do? Yeah, something like this. The remaining sides, so these are sort of, this is a fixed charge density wave, so I cannot basically put another electron, another spinless fermion on these sides. The remaining sides are a honeycomb lattice, and if you've chosen your phases to begin with correctly, you can make this basically the Haldane, if you dope basically be above this charge density wave, so that there is some liquid emerging on the remaining sides, you can make a Haldane model for this remaining particles, and you get something that's called a pinball liquid.
So you're assuming here that charge density wave is a big gap.
Right. So yeah. So this actually numerically has been found by Curtis et al. Stefanos Curtis, Dresden group. Just to say, so you can actually, you know, take advantage explicitly of those lattice effects, and you know, have interplay between topological order and symmetry breaking. Okay, good. So that was like what I wanted to comment on.
Thank you. So this is a possibility that you know, fractional convergence and symmetry breaking seems it's like a double layered system. You may have a charge balance space and charge imbalance space.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's what mainly controlled by the U up and down.
This is an operation.
So if I try to wonder if this U up, U down, down, U up, down about the same order, or maybe that's six, so you have this which one wins?
The same, but I mean, it's also a question how you measure the order. I think if you make them the same order, then we would just be... we would just be some on the phase very close to the phase transition. So I think the phase transition really happens at they start off the same order. That's like what I've seen in the ED so far. Yeah.
Is there critical
volume? I don't. I mean, that's so we've studied that numerically mainly, and there is no way to make a clear, you know, to see a clear phase transition. Actually, there's a gapless, extended gapless region due to finite size. At least, probably due to finite size. We don't know. Yeah. Well, there could be other phases in between. I'm not saying this is the only thing on the world. There could be more. Could be much richer.
Okay, more questions? Okay, thank you.